Hello, my friends, my fans, and total strangers who just came here to get in out of the silence. Spider is finally back on the web after a hiatus of several months, and I'd like to welcome you back into my office here at Tottering on the Brink, my home in Bowen Island, British Columbia. Here is my friend and fellow Bowen Island resident Sherry Ulrich with a track from her impeccable album, Find Our Way. My daughter Terry and I feel it could almost have been written specifically for us and for Terry's 15-month-old daughter, Marissa. It's called What She Left. Take it, Sherry.
This is my mother's pillow. This is my mother's bed. This is the place she closed her eyes and laid a weary head. Letters, maps, and photographs that mark the march of time. This is what she left for us to find. Mother's shadow, I am my mother's breath. I am the force of a well-lived life that never wanted less. And she said, be yourself and God is love, and above all else be kind. Well, this is what she left for us to find. Shadow, you are your grandma's breath. You are the force of a well-lived life that never wanted less. So grab your future with both hands and let her spirit shine. But this is what she left for us, the family that she
For the benefit of those of you who don't already know, I need to explain why that song is so apt for Terry and myself, and thereby explain the sad reason for my lengthy absence from the net, the first since I began Spider on the Web back in the late Paleolithic. If you've already read the homepage of my website or heard about it in some other way, just skip ahead a few minutes. My beloved wife of 35 years, Jean Marie Robinson, left this life at about 4:45 on Sunday afternoon, May 30th, a gentle smile on her face. Her departure was quite peaceful, and she was in no pain at all. She was 62 years and 2 months old, a victim of biliary cancer. Because her brilliant palliative care doctor, Paul Sugar, was able to forecast her passing almost to the hour, her daughter Terry, son-in-law Heron, and granddaughter Marissa were able to fly back from New York City just in time and were with me at her side when Jeannie died. Her mother, Dorothy Rubico, and sister, Laurie O'Neill, arrived from Massachusetts only hours later after Terry had had time to expertly make Jeannie look better than she had for days. Zen priests Michael Newton and Kate McCandless were also present, per Jeannie's wishes, as were our oldest friends in this part of the world, Greg McKinnon, Anya Coveney Hughes, and Stevie McDowell. Over the next few hours, several more of her Sangha buddies arrived, and chanting of the Prajnaparamita Heart Sutra was done. Her body was then bathed and dressed in her hand-sewn rakasu, as per Zen tradition. In accordance with her wishes, she was cremated. Half her ashes were scattered off this coast, and half were taken back to her childhood home, Cape Cod, so that her East Coast family can have a place to go and visit her. Only moments after Jeannie had passed, Terry put little Marissa down on Jeannie's breast and said, "Give Nana a hug, honey." Marissa did, one of the boneless, sprawl, cheek-borrowing, no-hurry hugs we've all come to know, means she really loves and trusts whoever she's hugging. And then she raised herself up on one arm, looked at Jeannie's face, I swear this is true, and waved bye-bye. The hairs stood up on the back of my neck. Jeannie, who had long been a lay-ordained Soto Zen monk, always yearned to become a full Buddhist priest, but the 5-year period of intensive practice and full-time study in the monastery that was required was logistically difficult for us, among other things, and we kept putting it off. In a farewell phone conversation, she told her personal teacher, Tenshin Reb Anderson Zenki, that her biggest regret was that she had never been able to find a way to study to become a priest. Reb, who gave her both her Dharma name Buchi Ehe, Dancing Wisdom, Eternal Peace, and her nickname in the Zen community, Wired Buddha, immediately told her that he would come to her funeral and ordain her a priest on the spot. That brought her deep joy, and will, I have no doubt, assist her greatly in her travels through the Bardos. Of course, Reb kept his word and began Jeannie's West Coast memorial service with her ordination, and I have to share this story with you. At a certain point in the ceremony, he cut a thread with a pair of scissors and told us this symbolized the shaving of Jeannie's head, which would have been done if she'd been present. As he said that, I was visited with the first full-bore psychedelic, totally convincing hallucination I've had since the last time I dropped acid over 30 years ago. Clear as day, and for a good 10 seconds, I saw my Jeannie on her knees, dressed all in white, arms outspread at her sides, beaming beatifically, her scalp gleaming in the overhead lights as it was shaved bare. Wow, I thought to myself, so stunned I didn't even think to burst into tears until later. I thought, I've been waiting 30 years to have an acid flashback. I didn't think they really existed, but I gotta say my first one was worth waiting for. The next day, I was talking about the ceremony with the Zen priest I mentioned earlier, Kakushi Kate McCandless. You know, she said, it's the funniest thing. You remember the point where Reb cut that thread to symbolize shaving Jeannie's head? Well, just at that moment, I had a sudden vision of Jeannie exactly as she would have looked at that point in the ceremony if she'd been present, on her knees, all in white, arms at her sides, smiling broadly with joy. Why are you looking at me like that? To learn more about Kakushi Kate McCandless, her husband and fellow priest Anshin Michael Newton, and the Vancouver Sangha to which Jeannie belonged, Mountain Rain Zen Community, visit www.mountainrainzen.org. I cannot praise highly enough Dr. Paul Sugar and the entire staff of the palliative care wing of North Vancouver's Lionsgate Hospital. All nurses and nursing aides are heroes, but those who work exclusively with the dying are a breed apart, as are those who work burn units. These bodhisattvas, over a dozen of them in the course of a week, were without exception willing to accede to absolutely any reasonable request by a family member and any unreasonable request by a heavily drugged patient, with infinite patience, competence, and compassion. They ignored regulations that were unreasonable and enforced the important ones with firm kindness. Visiting hours there are 24/7. They actively encourage the playing of instruments and singing, raucous laughter, and the sound of crying babies. They are not stingy with the delauded. They help Jeannie create a Buddhist altar on her windowsill. When your loved one enters endgame, they offer you blankets, pillows, and a special chair which can effortlessly become a startlingly comfortable bed so that you can stay at the bedside all night for as many nights as necessary. If you'd rather get a nearby hotel or B&B, they can find one for you and get you a rate. maybe this will shorthand it. One of the nurses assigned to Jeannie got chatting with her as she worked, learned a bit of Jeannie's story. Then, completely on her own initiative, she went to one of the computers in the nurse's station, Googled up both our websites, found and printed out the best photos she could find of Jeannie dancing solo and with her company, and also driving across America in a red, white, and blue VW microbus with her first husband, Daniel Corrigan, and winning a Hugo Award in Phoenix with me. And then she taped all those photos up to the closet door beside Jeannie's bed. As James Taylor once sang, "What she gonna do with folks like that?" I have lost my best friend, teacher, partner, lover, and co-grandparent, the most remarkable and forgiving person I have ever known, seemingly forever, as I understand that word. But by chance, on the very same day, two different people emailed me links to a letter written by Robert A. Heinlein to Forrest J. Ackerman near the end of World War II, consoling Forry on the loss of his brother in combat. In the middle of it, Robert suddenly wrote, "Forry, I have not a belief, not a conviction, but personal knowledge of survival after death. You will see your brother again." If that's true, and who am I to doubt Robert Heinlein on a matter so important? Then all I have to do is find her again. I'll simply track her across the universes and through the dimensions like Kimball Kinison and his Clarissa, or Alexander Hergensheimer chasing his Margrethe to hell itself if I have to. Shit, for a minute there I thought I had a problem. Merely a tedious delay. I have a lot to tell her about when we finally do find each other. Try to spend the downtime becoming a better, kinder man. Thank you for being her friend and mine. Thanks especially to all those who've sent Jeannie and me support, from hugs to emails to gifts to cash. All of it worked, made her passing a calm and fearless one, helped her to die with her characteristic grace, dignity, courage, and style intact. I've owed you loyal subscribers and other podcasts for a long time, and I appreciate your patience. I also know that I owe personal responses to each of you kind people who sent me an email or card or letter of condolence because you brought me a great deal of solace. But I'm afraid you're just not going to get one. I've received over 2,500 emails so far and countless hundreds of cards and letters. I simply can't face the task and beg you to forgive me. At this point, I badly need to try and put Jeannie's death behind me, even though I cannot succeed. To learn more about her remarkable life and career, visit my website homepage, where you'll find links to her obituaries in the Globe and Mail, the Halifax Chronicle Herald, the Bowen Island Undercurrent, and the Vancouver Sun, and also a link to an audio recording of Jeannie's obit on As It Happens, Canada's oldest and most popular radio program, which gave her the final 5 minutes of its May 31st edition. If you would like to make a memorial donation in Jeannie's name to the San Francisco Zen Center in support of their city center, the Green Gulch Farm near Muir Beach, or the Tassajara Mountains Retreat near Carmel, contact Scott McDougall either by phoning 415-354-0354 or by emailing scott.mcdougall@sfzc.org. That's scott.mcdougall@sfzc.org. And by the way, as we speak, Jeannie's partner and co-producer James Spasto and acclaimed writer David Gerald are close to completing their screenplay for a film version of Stardance. Jeannie had time to read the latest draft before she had to leave and pronounced herself deeply pleased with it. Follow their progress at http://stardancemovie.blogspot.com. That's more than enough talk for now, I think. Time for some music. Here's another Bowen Island friend, Pauline LaBelle, with a song from which I've taken a great deal of solace lately, the title track of her new CD, Rescue Joy.
I know you're hurting. I see you're afraid. it's all ending, the life you made. But even a broken heart can find a way to mend. Rescue joy from heartbreak. Rescue joy from heartbreak. There's a gift hidden deep in the pain. Life is good. Life is sweet. It offers itself at your feet. But there are days, I know it's true, when the walls of your life come tumbling down, down on you. Rescue joy from heartbreak. Rescue joy from heartbreak. And find the courage to start all over again. Please, please don't give up. One day you'll see you have all you need. You have all you need. You are whole. You are free. Rescue joy from heartbreak. Rescue joy from heartbreak. There's a gift hidden deep in the pain. Rescue to start all over again. One door has closed, another will open, I know it will. Life is calling you, calling your name so sweetly. Let me help you. I can help you. I can help you start all.
Rescue joy. I hear you, Pauline. I'm working on it. Sometimes it sure ain't easy. But as the sign on my daughter's kitchen wall keeps reminding me, It is what it is. We'll talk more about that before this podcast is over, I promise. I know some of you faithful listeners want to hear how I'm doing these days, and I'm aware that we haven't really touched on that subject yet. We'll get to it. But first, I want to play you a mess of good music by people I love for a while. For a start, here's a lively little track that features my friend and webmaster Colin McDonald. In one of Colin's numerous musical incarnations, he blows with the Vancouver Saxophone Ensemble. They are heard here with Pacific Symphonic Wind Ensemble and a cut from their new joint CD, Joy of Sax, entitled Slava. Now for an entirely different kind of sax, here's another friend of mine, Brian Breeze Kyle, formerly of New Orleans, now in Memphis, thanks to Katrina, with a cut from a CD of his that will never leave my iPod, Soul Time. Hear the breeze blowing, In Love We Grow. Thank you. Breeze Kyle can be seen in the 10th and final episode of the first season of the brilliant HBO series Tremé, created by David Simon and Eric Overmyer of The Wire. It's only a cameo, but he has lines. Furthermore, you get to see him recording with Alan Toussaint and Lloyd Price. Which reminds me, don't miss Tremé. The entire first season is available for pre-order on DVD from Amazon for $39, and it's a steal. After the network had seen the pilot episode, they ordered two more seasons on the spot. It's just that good. The best TV or film ever shot in New Orleans. Hang on now, here comes a fast segue. The opening theme of the series Tremé is sung by another friend of mine from New Orleans, John Boutte. And in addition to having a speaking part in the season closer himself, John currently appears on a Juno-nominated CD called Slide to Freedom 2, with another dear friend of mine, Doug Cox, on Dobro, and with Indian musicians Salil Bhatt on the Satvik Veena and Ram Kumar Mishra on tablas. Here is a shining example of the conjoining of the Mississippi and Ganges deltas by way of Vancouver Island, and I don't think you need to be told the title.
Amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. Yeah. I was lost, but now I'm found. I was blind, but now I see. that will lead us home.
Yet another of my Bowen Island buddies, Tony Dominelli, with an original song called All That Really Matters.
There's strange and foreign people living all around among us, and they see us just the same way, with a stranger eyes upon us. But deep inside we're much the same. We all need love and we all have pain. So when you think your luck is down, take a good look all around. Tell me all that really matters. Tell me all that really matters. Isn't love what really matters? All that really matters in the end. You can send away your elders to a place you'll rarely see them, and pretend that they won't need you, and pretend that you won't need them. But deep inside we're much the same. We all need love and we all have pain. Do we have to be reminded how long have we been blinded? And it's not a matter of who's right or wrong. It's much too late when they are gone. Tell me all that really matters. Isn't love what really matters? All that really matters in the end.
Right now, Tony's hard at work on an as-yet-untitled CD of original songs. Until it's ready, that track you just heard is available only on a splendid compilation of Bowen Island musicians called Bowen Eclectic, A Musical View, which also features tracks by Shari Ulrich, Pauline LaBelle, Matt Maxwell, Wendy Maxwell, Julie Vick, and many other excellent music makers. If you'd like to score a copy, contact Bowen Island Music Arts at bowenislandmusic@gmail.com or phone Lorraine Ashdown at 604-947-2061. And here, by God, is yet another dear friend from Bowen Island who also contributed a track to Bowen Eclectic, Christy Grace. But this track you're about to hear, which I'm sure you'll recognize, appears only on Christy's second solo CD, Contemplation. It is arranged by yet another friend, Michael Krieber, who co-produced my own CD, Belaboring the Obvious, and it features Dave Robbins on drums, Jody Prosnick on string bass, and, on acoustic piano and synth harmonica, a boy from the same hometown as Christy herself, Thunder Bay, Ontario, Mr. Paul Schaefer.
Thank you.
All right, the hour grows late. I'll just round out our theme of music by some friends of mine with one more batch of Bowen Island Buddies, and then get down to brass tacks. Here are a pair of tracks from a remarkable concept album called Dream Singer 2. It was written, arranged, and produced by my multi-talented friend Matt Maxwell, and features instrumental work by Matt, Shale Rinch, Matt Horner on occasional keyboards, and veteran jazz drummer Vito Reza. The first track you'll hear, Our Ship's Flashing, happens to be the only one on the album that has Matt Maxwell himself on lead vocal, with his wife Wendy Maxwell providing ethereal harmonies, a particular specialty of hers. On the second track, The Smaller That You Are, they're joined in vocals by Shale Rinch, oh, and that'll be Vito doing the cool vocal tabla emulation.
Get the door.
Okay, I guess it's time for me to talk for a while. My daughter Terry had a lot to do with getting me up off my ass and back to this microphone. She said you folks who've been reading my books and following my podcast over the years deserve to know how I'm doing, how I'm carrying Jeannie's death, that you all need to know I'm okay. Well, let's say that at this point I see okay as an achievable destination, and that's the course I'm setting. But there's no point in lying to you. Right now I'm gutted. I'm bisected. Not only is half of me gone, it was the best half, certainly the smartest half. I feel like I've aged at least 30 years and lost at least 30 IQ points. I seem to walk around underwater, moving against resistance, sounds muffled, light dimmed. Jeannie talked about it with me before she had to leave. She said, "I don't want you to pretend you're not in pain. You tried that when your mom died, and remember how that worked out? So let yourself feel the pain. Just don't wallow in it. It's okay to grieve for me. Just don't take a bath in it." You see why I say she was my smartest half. That's damn good advice. And I'm trying to follow it. I really am. But it's not easy. At this point, it's like trying to open the window in a submarine. Just a teensy bit. If I allow myself to think about it at all, I'm drowning. So, okay, at least once a day I let myself drown. It's not fatal, it just seems like it. They say in time you get used to it. And I seem to keep getting regular reminders that my pain is not the only or even near to being the largest pain in the world, and maybe I should just shut up and soldier. I'll give you two examples. Example one. Jeannie and I were married in a triple wedding ceremony, and one of the other two couples was her ex-husband and his second wife, Daniel and Amy. We were all living in a commune together at the time. What can I tell you? It was the tail end of the 60s. Daniel and Amy had their firstborn, Sophie Mae, the same year Jeannie and I had Luana, now Terry. A couple of years ago, we got a phone call out of the blue from Sophie Mae asking if she could come out from Massachusetts and stay with us for a while. She was going through turmoil in her life and needed to be far away in a quiet spot. We welcomed her with open arms, and she stayed with us for a week or two. We both fell in love with her. She was dealing with emotional hardship with courage, grace, dignity, and keen intelligence. A little over a month after Jeannie died, 2 days before our 35th wedding anniversary, in fact, Sophie was walking home along Route 28 in Harwich, Massachusetts, the road she had lived on most of her life with her two younger sisters, Ruby and Emily, when she was struck and killed by a car. Sophie leaves two children, 14 and 16. I do not believe pain can be quantified or compared. There is no way to know whether my stubbed toe hurts more than your sprained ankle, and no point in trying to decide. But I think it's safe to say that the pain of losing a truly extraordinary daughter at 35 is at least in the same region as losing a truly extraordinary spouse after 35 years. And consider, Jeannie and I had well over a year to prepare for her passing. Daniel and Amy and Ruby and Emily had no time at all to brace themselves for Sophie's sudden loss. For that matter, think of the young man who hit Sophie. The police say he was not stewed, not stoned, not speeding, not remiss in any way. He simply got unlucky on a dark and winding road. Example two. Last week I got a speaking invitation to a private college out east. I wrote back and said, "Look, I hate plane travel in the best of times. I'm 6'1", and right now I'm just deep in grief over my wife's passing. I just don't want to think about it. Try me again in another year or two." The professor wrote back at once and said, "I know exactly how you feel. I'm 6'4" myself. I really hate plane travel, too. And I know what you mean about the grief part, too. Last year, both my parents were murdered, and next year, my brother goes on trial for the murder." And I'm telling this man about grief? My tragedy is that I was married for 35 years to the most amazing woman I ever imagined, and then she died without pain in a room filled with her loved ones, sustained by her faith. Where is this man to look for closure? How can he ever hope to find peace? The only close family he has to share this tragedy with was the cause of it. So I try to keep reminding myself that if, once or twice a day, for half an hour or so, I drown in sorrow and grief, there are considerably worse fates. And every day, when I finally emerge from my bathtub of self-pity, I find the same reasons to rejoice and resume my life, namely my beautiful daughter Terry Luana, her handsome electrical engineer Heron, and the end point of evolution, their 15-month-old, gorgeous, genius, bodhisattva baby Marissa Alegria, which means happiness from the sea. There is so much of Jeannie in that child, I can hardly wait to see her grow up. In the meantime, I could eat her with a spoon. She can already recognize herself in a mirror months earlier than usual, and psychologists say that trait correlates strongly with high empathy, such as Jeannie had. She has ants in her pants, and her grandmother was known in Zen circles as Wired Buddha. She's a champion talker, but enjoys sharing silence, again like her grandmother. She has a dancer's balance and grace, and she dances even when no music is playing. If she finds something she finds interesting, a rock or a marble, she immediately and invariably gives it away to someone else. If you go to youtube.com and search for Jeannie's Dharma name, Bucci Ehe, that's Bucci Ehei, you'll find a slideshow of photos of her East Coast Memorial Service in Provincetown, Massachusetts, which was assembled by her sister Lori O'Neill and set to music written and sung by her sister Dori Leger. First, you see three of her sisters, Lori, Dori, and Mary Rodericks, scattering some of Jeannie's ashes at an extremely remote dune shack that was one of her favorite places in the world to meditate. Next, you see those three, plus her fourth sister, Kathy Rubico, and Jeannie's mother, Dorothy Rubico, and me and Terry, all of us scattering more of Jeannie's ashes into Provincetown Harbor from the boat her grandfather, Captain Frank Parsons, used to fish from, the Richard and Arnold. Then come shots of the funeral itself at Provincetown Cemetery, a place of astonishing beauty and serenity. It was a very nice service, and very nice words were spoken, and then everyone departed for the reception at the Provincetown Inn. Finally, there was just me and Terry and Heron and Marissa left. Terry and I were side by side with an arm around each other, crying silently together, while Heron held his daughter. And I looked up and looked out at the sea ahead of me, and knew I was surrounded by centuries of dead Portuguese fishermen and fishermen's loved ones. And all at once I seemed to behold a great wave growing on the horizon, like the Katrina storm surge coming for the lower Ninth Ward, a perfect storm-sized monster wave of pure heartbreak and black despair that nothing could outrun, and I knew for sure that when it came crashing down on me, it was going to capsize me and founder me and drive me down to the bottom and keep me there. And just then Marissa, who had up until now been as good as gold all day, suddenly went nuts. She threw a fit, yelled and screamed until her father had to set her down on her feet. She wanted something, and she damn well wanted it now. So Terry said, "What do you want, honey?" and then repeated the question in Portuguese. And clear as a bell, little Marissa said, for the first time in her life, mind you, "Grandpa! Grandpa! Grandpa!" and demanded that I pick her up. Terry and I looked at each other and both said at the same instant, "Jeannie did that." And so I did as directed. I picked Marissa up, and I clutched onto her with both arms like a life preserver, and she wrapped herself around me like a life jacket, and boom, the wave of bleakness came down on me, and I bobbed to the surface, and I rode that son of a bitch all the way to the beach and walked ashore safe and sound with my granddaughter in my arms. I should add, by the way, that as of this date, Marissa has never again called me Grandpa. She's still working on Mommy and Daddy. So, there you have it, friends and kind strangers. How am I doing? I'm a spent fuse. Mocus and out of focus, a lost ball and tall grass motherfucker. At least once a day I find myself way out in the middle of the ocean in serious danger of drowning. But I have three terrific life preservers living half a mile down the road, and thank God Almighty they all love me. And I have all you fine folks out there who have sent me more than 2,500 emails of condolence and support, over 200 lovely and warm cards, money in startling amounts, CDs full of musical solace, pounds of coffee, and bottles of 400th anniversary old Bushmills. There is simply no way I can ever repay any of you, much less all of you. I can only do my best to pay it forward. I'm trying very hard to write you all a new book. And if I'm finding it 10 times as hard now that Jeannie isn't here to tell me it's terrific and then edit it, well, as Super Chicken used to say, I knew the job was dangerous when I took it. I'll keep plugging, and no doubt in time the wine will start to flow again. I can't wait to share it with you. Right now I'm sitting here in my office at peace, looking at photos of my beautiful daughter and grandchild, with a belly full of delicious Brazilian barbecue and a caipirinha, a magic healing potion made with lime juice, ice, and a booze called cachaça, both made for me by my son-in-law Heron earlier tonight. Terry's been working hard to help me make sense of Jeannie's estate and my own finances, and filling me with awe and admiration for the incredible job of parenting she and her husband do every day. You want to know how I'm doing, guys? John Hendricks said it better than I ever could. He wrote English lyrics for the Italian song Estate by Bruno Martino and Bruno Brighetti. I wish I could play you John's version or Joao Gilberto's version, but I don't have podcast permission, so I will close this podcast by taking a crack at it myself. It says exactly how I'm feeling these days, so perfectly it helps me to sing it. In summer.
More than any other season, my heart has lost all thought of rhyme or reason. Without you, it's like winter in my heart. It's summer, a memory of the things we did together. Stronger than the trials we had to weather. I can't believe that you and I must part. It's the end of life's daydream, like plucking all the petals from the roses, like bearing all the secrets love discloses, like stopping songs of birds before they start. In summer, when once again I feel the old desire, as you return to set my soul on fire. Without you, it's like winter in my heart. Trials we had to weather. I can't believe that you and I must part. It's the end of life's daydream, like plucking all the petals from the roses, like bearing all the secrets love discloses, stopping songs of birds before they start. In summer, once again I feel the old desire, as you return to set my soul on fire. Without you, it's like winter in my heart. Thank you.
thank you for falling by. Come back in a couple of weeks and I'll whip another hour of good music on you, some of it recorded by people I've never even met for a change. And who knows, maybe a little science fiction too. I may even have some good news to report on Jeannie's Stardance movie. Keep your fingers crossed, please. I'm going to leave you now with the final 5 minutes of the May 31st edition of Canada's longest-running and most enduringly popular Dinner Hour radio program, As It Happens, in large part because it will give me a chance to hear my Jeannie laugh again.
Most people haven't given Zero Gravity Dance too much thought, but Jeannie Robinson did, and she managed to turn those thoughts into a Hugo Award-winning novel. The dancer, writer, choreographer, and Buddhist lay monk has died at the age of 62. Jeannie Robinson was born in Boston and discovered dance at an early age. Her first performance was at the age of 5. She had her first stint as a choreographer at 11, and she was teaching by 15. Around that time, she discovered modern dance, and a career was born. After moving to Nova Scotia in 1972, she founded Nova Dance Theatre, the first and only professional modern dance company in Nova Scotia. She met science fiction writer Spider Robinson in the woods of Nova Scotia. They married and became creative collaborators, and out of that collaboration came the concept of Zero Gravity Dance. Ms. Robinson wrote the novel Star Dance with her husband, and the book went on to win a number of awards, including a Hugo. The pair turned the work into a trilogy, with the sequels Starseed and Star Mind. At one time, Ms. Robinson almost had the chance to make weightless dance in space a reality. She once made the list for NASA's Civilian in Space program and planned to become the first zero-gravity dancer, but that program was ended after the Challenger disaster. For the last 10 years, Spider and Jeannie Robinson lived on a small island off the coast of BC, a home where a website bio said they raise and exhibit prize hopes. And decades earlier, the couple were part of the Back to the Land movement. In December 2007, they looked back at their 70s lifestyle with the CBC's Marcy Marcuse on CBC Radio Manitoba's Weekend Morning program.
Why did you guys decide to do this?
We were hippies.
We were products of the times. In the late 60s, there was a Back to the Land movement that we all heard about. And in the early 70s, I came up to Nova Scotia from Boston with friends and bought 50 acres on the Bay of Fundy, or right by the Bay of Fundy and just up from it. And Spider came up to visit friends nearby, and then we fell in love and did our Back to the Land thing.
Next thing you knew, we were all living in a commune. And we were basically trying to do without anything that smacked of capitalism.
No electricity, chopped wood, carry water.
Grew our food. We thought we were preparing for the apocalypse. We knew nuclear doom was coming at any minute, and we wanted to know what was it going to be like after the bombs fell. Let's check it out.
It was sort of an off and on again thing, but we were there for a large portion. We got pregnant, we got married, we had a kid. We were living back there for 2 or 3 years off and on in the mid-70s.
First, we spent a couple of years together totally technology-free. I mean, we were in the middle of the woods. There was no electricity. There was no way to run the radio. There was no television or any way to plug one in.
And what year is that?
I think it was 74 to 76.
That range, yeah. Then after that, there was a period when we tried to compromise. Well, all right, we'll still cut our firewood, we'll still grow our food, we'll still pump water or go haul it from the stream, but we will have wall current that we could use to run the CBC radio, Or
after we had our daughter, we needed electricity.
Yeah, a few necessities just popped in there. That's the whole thing. We wanted to know what it was like living without technology, and what we found was the answer was, all it takes is about 27 hours a day of back-breaking labor, 8 days a week for about 380 days a year. My mentor, Robert Heinlein, once said, "It's amazing how much mature wisdom resembles being too tired." And we've become wiser these days.
It was just a phase. It was the end of the Vietnam era, which is partly why I came up to Canada. I was very politicized at the time as a youngster. And it was part of that whole process was to go back to the land.
We were very dissatisfied with civilization at the time. I can't quite recall why, but it seemed odious. We wanted to be elsewhere. Also, we wanted to try living vegetarian. That was another thing that was difficult to do in polite society. It was better to do out in the woods if you wanted to be vegetarian.
Well, yeah, we grew our food. We got good at it. So.
And it was good. I liked being a vegetarian. It was very pleasant.
You guys today, would you give up your computer?
Oh, no.
No, not possible. I'm now addicted to the Internet.
And it's also how we make our living to some extent, you know? I mean, we run our businesses that way, so we need to be plugged in. I mean, yeah, Spider and I live a humble lifestyle. You know, we have a sort of a motto of we're happy with just enough.
That was Spider and Jeannie Robinson speaking with Marcy Marcuse on CBC Manitoba's Weekend Morning Show. Jeannie Robinson, a woman of many talents, has died at the age of 62.